I want to remind everyone that Hacksaw Ridge opens nationally in the U.S. November 4th. And then for quick, so you can transcribe more easily, we're going to do a quick voice ID of everyone, starting in the back row, if you could say your name and either your character's name or your role related to making the movie.
It's too early in the morning to remember. Bill Mechanic, producer.
Luke Bracey, Smitty Rocco.
Teresa Palma, Dorothy Shudi.
Ben Spahn, Sergeant Howell.
David Permit, producer.
Andrew Knight, Australian.
yes, and Mel Gibson, director.
Andrew Garfield, Desmond Doss.
Robert Shankin, screenwriter.
Great, we're going to start in the first row with Stephen.
Okay, Mel, this movie, like all the films you've directed, is emphatically violent, and I wonder if you could talk about your feelings about violence as being an innate part, perhaps, of man, maybe because of an original sin, and because Desmond Dawes does not want to kill or fight,
sure.
Does that make him a saint in a way?
Well, I think the nature of the film has... firstly, I wanted to be realistic in a war situation. In Okinawa, it was the greatest loss of life in the South Pacific, and it was... I mean, the Japanese even described a steel rain of bullets and explosions, and napalm was used. So I wanted to make it real. And I think it also highlights what it means for a man with conviction and faith to go into a situation that is hellish, hell on earth, a situation that reduces most men to the level of animals. And in the midst of that maelstrom, this man is able to hone his spirituality and achieve something higher. In fact, above war, above religion, above everything. Mm. It's like he goes in and he performs acts of love. In the midst of hell, which is like the beauty of the story, and it's the pinnacle of heroism.
So do you present him as sort of a Christ-like figure at the end when he's on the stretcher up in the sky? It sort of reminded me of the figure of Christ that's the statue at the beginning of La Dolce Vita with Fellini.
No, I wasn't specifically thinking that, but there's some parallels there. I mean, the man was like, I mean, you know, Christ was Desmond Doss's hero, and, you know, he actually lived right through the greatest act of love, as it was proclaimed, greater love hath no man than he laid down his life for his friends. And what was Desmond doing the whole time?
Right.
Through Guam and Leyte and Okinawa. He was practicing that. And so that's why I think it's a love story, not a war film.
Okay.
Yeah.
Debbie, question right here.
First of all, congratulations to all of you. Mel, it's been well worth the 10-year wait for this film. Best picture of the year.
Oh, thank you. Your lips to God's ears.
Yeah. I want to ask you, Mel, about your editing. John Gilbert's editing and your sound design is some of the finest I've seen in a film, especially a film with battle sequencing. Can you talk about working with your considerations and working with John and your sound team to achieve the level of immersion that you did?
Well, you know, John is now working on another film I'm involved with because I loved what he did so much. And, you know, you start to work with someone. He's got good credits, you know, Lord of the Rings and stuff, you know. And but it wasn't until I actually worked with John, like I was a week in and I was worshiping him. So, you know, it's beyond question. The man's a truly great editor, film editor, and did wonders with some of these images, too. Like, I was like, wow. It's cool, you know, let's stick this together with this. They don't belong together, but by God, it works. You know? And this is crazy, right? But the sound team, I mean, didn't they just win an Oscar or something? Those guys for, like, Mad Max or something. And so I hunted them down in Sydney, and there they were, doing nothing.
You know? Why not? Zumbi, question over here.
Hi.
Yeah.
I'm Japanese, and before my question, I'm so glad you hired the Japanese actor to play Japanese soldier.
Oh, yeah.
It's a different attitude.
Really funny, because, like, all the Japanese guys at lunch, they go, hey, you got them, right? They were like, they're like all Australians, and it was pretty funny. Some of them are from Japan, though.
My question is, so this movie is, the religion is a really big theme. So,
yes.
What's the relationship you and the religion face, and how influence your everyday life about the religion of you?
Me? Well, look, I'm a poor practitioner. You know, I would like to have good faith. That's why I see stories like this with a guy like Desmond, whose faith is unshakable. And I'm, like, inspired by that. And maybe I could take a leaf out of his book on some level. It's not about religion so much as it's about faith and conviction and standing by it and just pure love, which is at the heart of, you know, God, I think, which is like, you know, as far as I go, and I'm imperfect, you know, I'll sort my stuff out, maybe in private.
Question right here.
Yes, sir. My name is Rama. I'm Seventh Day Adventist, mm-hmm. born and raised, third generation SDA. Mm-hmm. So Desmond Doss is like Hercules, larger than life legend in our community. I've heard about him since I was a kid, and he spoke at my school, Sierra University, before he passed. So thank you for making for bringing his story to the big screen in such an awesome way, you guys. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Desmond Doss is our hero. So my question relating to that, in the movie could have just said, you know, he's just a Christian who wants to, you know, hold on to his faith. But no, your movie actually specified and informed the audience that we SDA are mostly vegetarians. We SDA, you know, worship on the Saturday. So why do you think it's important to point that out, and how much research into our SDA community did you do in the process of making this film?
Do the writers maybe want to address that specifically?
Yeah, good.
Start with Robert, because Robert really did the groundwork.
Well, I don't think you could tell the story of Desmond Doss and ignore his faith, his religious practice. So it was very important to all of us to get this right, to be accurate. I think it undergirds who he is. And you know, Desmond is such an extraordinary, such an unusual hero. He comes into this situation, the army in 1944, as you point out, he's a vegetarian, and he doesn't work on Saturday, guys, because that's the day I worship, and I don't pick up a gun, and I'm a pacifist. You can't tell this story without speaking to the religious faith that undergird Desmond's life and was such an important part of his experience on Hacksaw Ridge. And I think
and also the possibility of the army coping with someone who has those kind of conditions put on them. I mean, you could almost understand why the army thought this wasn't going to work. And what's so extraordinary is somehow he made it work. You know, not prepared to fight on the Sabbath, wouldn't eat bully beef. extraordinary.
And yet, of course, he does make that final compromise on the last day to fight on the Sabbath because, as Mel points out, his love for his fellow man, which is at the heart of his religion. And so he's not a man who's incapable of compromising. It's just that it must be of the highest order, and that's the choice he makes on that day.
Mm-hmm. Question right here, Angela.
My question is for Andrew. You did a fantastic job, first of all. And since you're playing a gentleman who most of us have never seen before, maybe we've heard of him, but we haven't seen him before, did you kind of go the extra mile in terms of capturing that character? Because there was some video of him and that kind of thing, but did you just kind of create him from the screenplay? And also for both you and the actors that were in the field, Vince and Luke, can you talk a little bit about shooting those scenes out in the field? And, you know, how did you feel when you were actually out there doing that? Because it was pretty emotional watching it.
Well, first of all, it's very rare that you read a script that, as an actor, for me, that I go, oh God, I have to do this, and it's a horrible feeling to have the longing to tell a story be greater than the doubt about if I can do it or not. So that was the first thing, and it's a testament to Robert and Andrew, and of course it's just a testament to Desmond and who he was. So I wanted 5 years to prepare. You know, when you have someone's life that needs to be honored, not only for his religious community, but the religion that was his way becomes transcended by his actions. It's embodied in the moment where he is faced with a Japanese soldier in the Japanese tunnels underground and doesn't hesitate to start healing a man in need. He doesn't see skin color. He doesn't see uniform. He doesn't see an enemy. He sees another brother. This is a transcendent act and a rare thing for us to witness in our culture. So for me, it was I wanted to know everything. I wanted to read everything. There was a particularly profound moment where I went to Chattanooga, Tennessee, which is where Desmond eventually retired and passed away. And I went onto his old property and went into his old woodshed and handled his tools and walked around the lake that he would walk around. And it was, I spent a day there just kind of praying and asking, like, just guide me through this. If you can hear me, tell me what to do. Tell me how to move. Tell me how to speak. Tell me how to behave, and I'll do whatever you say. So that there was some, there was a strange, mysterious spirituality going on around the making of this film. And I know Bill and David Permit can speak to the long process it's taken to get Desmond's incredibly inspiring story out to an audience in order to make ripples further into the world, that his story will create ripples in the lives of others that see this film. I do believe about being true to one's deepest self. But in terms of the battle stuff,
the battle stuff, the production designers and everyone and the crew down in Australia did such an amazing job creating a hell-like landscape. Yeah, in the back of Sydney kind of thing. And the first time we saw the battlefield was kind of, as actors, was kind of the first time that we go over the top on that rope, and you couldn't help but be struck by this absolute devastation. That's one layer on it. And then also the special effects guys with their kind of new types of box bombs and pyrotechnics kind of added another layer to it. You're going in there, and it's funny because in one point you're kind of going, oh, how could they? You can't even imagine what they went through. And it's like, wait a minute, that's exactly what we're trying to do. But it really helps that everyone involved in the whole kind of filming of those battle scenes was so on point and so ready to tell the most truthful story from Mel all the way down. But then it's also that melding of that fear and that truth, but also making sure it's clear. And I think Mel was kind of instrumental in helping us portray the truth, but also technically as well, to make sure it was as clear as possible.
Yeah, it was always, each day bringing the right level of intensity or what's going on to it. But I guess for me, seeing Mel in that environment visually, what he brought to it was just incredible. But moreover, I think the organization, you're almost like catching butterflies. It's, you have a bunch of people moving around. Some are extras that are not, the communication level there is very difficult with the amount of people. And yet, there's very specific actions that you're having to track. And I'm sure for Mel, it's a much bigger jigsaw. So as an actor in it, you're trying to be connected to the moment. But I was really just impressed with watching him kind of be a conductor for all these moving parts and organizing. These were pretty intricate. You'd have, hundreds of people having to move and do things at a certain moment in some of the cases, and even in the smaller decisions, there was bags being thrown or things that were needed to be executed along with explosions. So Mel was tremendous at making you feel relaxed enough, comfortable within it to not overthink it, but at the same time really, organize it all so that it was beautiful, ultimately, as it came together.
Question right here.
My question is for Vince. Was it challenging or cathartic yelling at your troops all day long? And for Andrew and Luke, can you talk a little bit about the boot camp training process?
Well, the script was beautiful, and what these guys wrote was just magnificent. There's very little that has changed in the actual writing of that scene, especially when you're first meeting the troops. And I thought it was, just terrific writing. So it's in that moment you're trying to obviously do all the things that an actor does to come to that feeling as if you're sort of in it, and then you're listening. But we had such great lines and stuff within that. And then Mel is, such a good actor and so fun. I learned so much in this and that, and even in dramatic pieces, to find the levity and not be so try hard and
you know, allow things to kind of be authentic by being vulnerable and stuff at times. So a lot of the great decisions and turns and things were great ideas that he had. You know, walk by this guy, something catches your eye. You know, you would assume that it would be the naked guy, but it's not. You know, so you know, he had a lot of, I think, visual ideas and stuff that really kind of brought another layer to it. That was a lot of fun. But truly, the writing was just tremendous. And you know, doing the research that I did on the drill sergeant, and especially with it being a battle time, even more so, I think it's important that you're trying to prepare people for life and death situations. You have to put them through a very vigorous test, both physically, emotionally, and mentally, because their life and the people that are around them will depend on how they respond in those moments, and there's no perfect training. And then, of course, on the other side of that, there's a love and a bond and a friendship having survived it. And I think drill sergeants at their best, you become a parent. These feel like your children. You're responsible for their lives. You take that very seriously. And so underneath it, there's a deep love, but there's an urgency to keep them alive as well.
Towards the boot camp, it was kind of, we had about a week where really we kind of all just crammed, you know, from kind of 9 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock in the afternoon with a great guy, John Isles from Australian Special Forces, who was amazing. He's done a lot of work on films and stuff. I think he's still an active member of the forces in Australia. And I mean, it was necessarily doing everything at boot camp, but knowing what we needed to know and really drilling that in. And, you know, holding arms and stuff like that. But it helps when every single person, every bloke involved in that unit is all on the same team, and everyone knew the kind of heightened kind of story that we're telling. And so everyone was completely committed, and that makes it very easy to learn stuff and become closer, even in that week that we had to kind of do it. It was just everyone kind of cramming for a test, really, in that idea, and everyone did their homework and showed up to class ready to learn. So we were all excited about learning this and doing it to the best of our ability.
I think one of the, just to add to that, I think one of the reasons why the film works on an emotional level is because of the bond that all of the young actors in the barracks created, and you can feel the devotion to each other, led by Vince, as he said, throughout the mockery there was this thread of love underneath every single piss take moment.
Yeah.
He was doing it because he loved us, and you could feel it through Vince's spirit and how he created Sergeant Howell. And I think that was just contagious through all of the young actors in the barracks. And one of the most moving scenes to me that just makes me cry uncontrollably every time I see it is after the first assault, and you have those five or six soldiers, including Mel's son Milo, and they're in this foxhole, and they're naming names, and I think Ghoul chokes on the name that he names. And I just, without even thinking about it, I just lose my mind, because it's just young boys who love each other and who had no idea what they were about to face. And it's a real testament to their ability as actors, and, you know, Luke and all the young Aussie guys in those barracks, and the devotion to each other and to creating true bonds of love, because otherwise we don't care. And they made us care a lot.
There was a question right here.
Hi, this question is for Mr. Gibson. I'm wondering why you didn't give yourself a role in the film, and also if you could talk about the exciting cast. I mean, it's a great cast.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, look, I think the contribution made by everyone in this cast was, I think it's the best work any of them have ever done. Mm. And I was really proud and pleased to be able to sort of stand back and watch it happen. Mm. And they had to tread some fine lines here. I mean, you know, Vince and our adorable young friend here, Sean Bean Jr., I call him. fine lines they had to tread, because they weren't necessarily doing things to make you like them. But they eventually, and you could see it very subtly done too, the turn of all the men and to Desmond, whom they sort of at first despised and ridiculed, and you could see it happen, and it was very subtle. So it was deftly done by all the performers, and I applaud all of them for making me look good. So it's fantastic. Teresa, you know, how adorable is she? Where is she? What was your other part of that question?
Why weren't you in it?
Oh my God!
Why didn't you give yourself?
I was in it. My shadow is in it.
And
your arm.
Also, my arm is in it. Because this is a true story. I said to Hugo. I said, Hugo, come do this film. And he said, yeah, okay. And then he changed his mind. I'm like, oh no. And then the scheduling was such that he couldn't do the scene in the courtroom. So I did it.
Really?
And so there's my hand and stuff and shadow and stuff, and we green screened him in later. We had to green screen him in. So he wasn't actually there, but he is now.
Yeah, so I wasn't acting opposite Hugo in that scene. I was acting opposite Mel in, like, you know, his jeans and T-shirt in that scene, off camera. But thank God, you know.
Yeah. But,
we were all trying to convince him just to put the whole bloody costume on and just do the part. When we didn't have that part.
But yeah, but
thank God Hugo came in, right?
Look what Hugo did.
Yeah, unbelievable.
He did some amazing work.
Yeah.
And that guy's amazing. Mm. You know, I was just so pleased.
Question right here?
My question is for Mr. Gibson. We have all marveled at the work you did and the tribute, I think, that it is to the men who served here in this horrible battle scene. I'm curious, you did a battle scene as a director in Braveheart.
Yeah.
Now, did that ready you for what you experienced on this film, or is it just a completely different animal?
It's a different thing, you know, because sometimes you get into the hand-to-hand stuff, but, you know, medieval conflict is different, you know. You're kind of like hitting each other with blunt objects close up. This had like bombs and bullets, and it's a different thing. And it's the degree of difficulty goes way up, believe me. And I had about, 25% less than the budget of Braveheart, and half the time.
Mm.
And that's 20 years ago, all right? So the nature and the character of making films, now this is an independent film, okay? Made on a, you know, it looks pretty good for what we made it for, I think. Mm. You know, it looks like $100 million, yeah, it was about 40, I think it's what it ended up being. And it looks like 100 to me.
Mm-hmm. Question right back here.
Hola. Just to borrow a term from one of Vince's classics, you're all so money. And Teresa, you played such a great Dorothy. What was it like to play the anchor, the woman behind this man?
I mean, firstly, I think just to be a part of a film that I knew had the ability to affect positive change in the world was such a blessing in and of itself. Mm. And then to portray this woman who's a real woman with an incredible spirit to her, and she's very layered, and she's vulnerable, and she's strong, and she does stand by her convictions. And there was so much to do with her, but truly my focus was bringing to life this love, this romance between these two people. And I'd heard so many stories about their love and just how fierce that was and how committed it was. So I think there was actually a lot of self-imposed pressure to play her in a way that did the story justice. It was challenging in many ways, but I sort of got into a flow with Andrew, and it became this really organic dance between us. So we found a wonderful kind of way of being with each other, and it just kind of grew from there. And I love seeing them together in this film. It's really important, and I hope that they would be proud of it.
I'm going to just add to that I don't mind Teresa. Teresa has this access to embodying unconditional love. And it's a rare thing in a human being, and especially rare to capture on film. And in every moment with Teresa playing this part, I felt like I could do no wrong as a man, as a husband, as a terrible kisser, as a, you know, it didn't matter. I knew that no matter what, and the scene, which I think she so profoundly nails in the prison when she comes to visit Desmond. There's she fills that small room with love that's threatening to break down those stone walls. That's what my experience of being in that scene with her. So I just want to kind of acknowledge her ability to pour forth that love from every pore.
If I can add it, it's interesting. We have shown this to the families, and they're very supportive. Dorothy's niece said, "I mean, what she said to me was that when she saw it, it's what she saw the love in her aunt and uncle, and imagined what they were like when they were younger and in love." And we took it back to Seventh Day Adventist, where Desmond, you know, lived, and to a man, including Desmond's son,
yeah,
they honor, think that what Andrew brought to life in Desmond, respected him and brought him to life in a way they didn't think was possible.
Yeah, I talked to Desmond's junior, and he was like, he said, "That man was my dad." Wow. He was like totally blown away by it. And I spoke to him for an hour, and I was like eating it up, going, "Yeah." But it's like, but true, you know, Andrew did he inhabited that character very truthfully, and you know, he's the kind of film is riding on his shoulders. So, thanks. Great job.
One of the things I actually really love about the film, which Robert had right from the start, is it's actually fairly languid to start with. It could almost be a 40s or a 50s film with Jimmy Stewart or Gary Cooper. What it does is, one, allow you to understand the characters, but two, lull you into a world and then shock you with a modern sensibility about war. Mm. And I think it's the contrast of both those worlds that these guys did so brilliantly. And then Mel Briggs puts you right in the middle of horror. You get what that world was like then. Mm.
You know, one of the most flattering comments I got after people saw the film, they were like, "Wow, this is the way people used to make films." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, you mean like the 30s or 40s? And they said, "No, the 80s. That's cool. And it really made me laugh. Because, but I don't think they were kidding around. You know?
A question right here.
Wonderful film, and in one of my columns I too already listed it as the best film of the year.
Oh, wow.
But I wanted to ask you, how long was your shoot? And also, in reading the notes, I was kind of tickled when I read that if you didn't like how a soldier particularly was in the war scene, that you actually jumped on the ground and showed them what to do.
Really? Yeah. Oh, gee, I don't know. I've spent a little bit of time crawling around foxholes, getting dirty. I'm too old for this stuff, right? I remember one time I was running back and forth, and I slipped on something, some kale. I just killed myself. But all of a sudden, guess who was there to save me? Like, quick as a whip. "Are you okay?" he was into his part. Like, ridiculous. It was like hilarious. And I was like, "Yeah, fine, get off me." But I forgot what you asked, though. It was like, how many days? I think it was 59 days, which was like killer. I think we ended up squeezing another couple of days out of it, like maybe 60 or 161 or something. But you know, there was a guy on the set. Nobody ever mentions the first AD. Mm-hmm. This guy was, it was like some organizational, like a computer for a brain, right? Mm-hmm. He's very bright, and his name was PJ Voten, and he's like just this amazing kind of. He's your right hand there. And he's kind of annoying at times because he's like, "Oh, you got to move on." You're like, "Shut up." That kind of stuff, you know, like, "Oh, we're running out of, we're into overtime." You're like, "Ah," you know, that kind of stuff. But he really kept stuff cracking, and I owe an enormous debt to that guy for just his organizational prowess and his wit, actually.
Yeah, right.
Probably helping well is that we had, I think, 45 days of first unit.
Yes.
So it's actually harder.
Yeah.
It's like when we're saying constrained by budget, we were constrained by budget. 45 of principal photography is ridiculous for a movie this size.
Yeah.
Got any question right here?
Okay, we need to hear from the two men that found this story and brought it to all of us. David and Bill, how did you find Desmond's story
And then what led you to Mel as the director?
David, why don't you take it off?
Well, I'll just briefly tell you because it's been a 16-year journey for me, so I'll encapsulate that in a short story. There was a stunt coordinator named Joel Kramer who had worked with me on a number of films I produced, and he actually mentioned Desmond's name to me for the first time 16 years ago. And he knew a friend who had known Desmond who came into my office, and they told me the story of Desmond Doss. And I didn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was one of the most heroic, miraculous stories I've ever heard. It sounded like it was made up. And I thought I knew history quite well. I had never heard of Desmond Doss, and nor had anyone else, because I found out that I wasn't the first person interested in telling Desmond's story. I was preceded by Hal Wallace, the legendary producer. I was preceded by Daryl Zanuck. I was actually preceded by Audie Murphy, who met with Desmond Doss. So Desmond had Hollywood at his doorstep, I found out, and he had no real interest in exploiting his story. He was a very modest, humble man, never considered himself a hero. And it's a long journey, but basically what happened, there was a gentleman named Terry Benedict, who is another reason we're all here and had the opportunity to get this film made after so many years. Terry had a relationship with Desmond, and he was convinced, he convinced Desmond that he would leave it up to his church, the Seventh-day Adventist, to basically interface with us eventually, and I'll let Bill speak to that. But Terry Benedict was doing a documentary at the time and gained Desmond's trust. He was very close to Desmond and the church. He was a member of the church. So Terry became kind of the liaison for us eventually. And what happened was I had thought about going to a number of places to finance the early development of the project and had a couple of conversations with a few people, and Bill had just left Fox and started his company, and I was fortunate enough that I brought it to Bill, and Bill really responded, and we got involved in the very early stages of development with Terry, and it's been a long journey. You know, the term development hell in Hollywood, I guess, it took a long time, but I said to Andrew earlier today, you know, I think things are meant to be when they're meant to be, and the way this film has come together with everybody here is a miracle in itself. And obviously when Mel became involved 2 years ago, that's when we really started to gear up finally for production after all those years. Anyway, Bill, I'll let you fill in.
Okay, so Terry Benedict had the rights. Terry, I bought the license, the rights from Terry and the Adventist Church. They set up a council, DOS Council, to protect the rights of Desmond. And we had a very broad agreement, which was really we would not do anything that would contradict any of Desmond's beliefs, and nothing else. We would have a license to tell the story the way it should be. So I funded the rights and thought you had to do this independently because you didn't want the religion to be more or less. You just want to tell the story the way the story should be told. What Andrew said of the structure that we decided with Robert is, it's very unusual. It's not a three-act structure. It's pretty much a two-act structure, in that you spend the time meeting people, and then you're dropped into battle. So we brought in Robert, who was run the Pulitzer for Kentucky Cycle and had written on two of the shows of the Pacific, and he wrote the Johnny Bassavoni story, which is almost Desmond's polar opposite, more like Smitty. You know, it's the guy who fires the machine guns. But anybody who understood a hero to me could understand the other side of that. So, and Robert's script was good enough that kept us alive for 10 years or 11 years. It really wasn't development hell. There's only three writers on the project. And so it was more the financiers, you know, people didn't, you know, World War II was in vogue. Religion was an issue in the picture. Two-act structures, we're in the worst of times in the movie business, and that the movies are, all prefab houses, and all anybody cares about is a sequel, and everything else is thrown away. And when you're making a movie with scale, you can make really small movies, but you can't make those middle-level pictures today. And that's really, so it's not development. it's Hollywood hell. In 2002 and you know 2010, I took it to Mel. I mean, when I was running Fox, we financed Braveheart. When I first met with Mel, the Braveheart was stuck in the same kind of limbo. People didn't want to make it. Who cares about Scottish freedom and you know a guy in a kilt and all that stuff? And when I sat there with Mel that first time, he had watched I think every battle scene in every movie ever made, and took me through the movie. And you know, this is what we're gonna do. This is how it's gonna be, you know, and all that, the Mel stuff, you know. And he's better at that, but. And so it was an easy movie for me to get behind, and I always felt this movie was a different form of Braveheart. I used to pitch it that way, that it's William Wallace and Desmond Doss are in some ways very similar men. They were two men who were prepared to die for what they believed in. So one was violent, one was nonviolent, but it's still at that same center. Mm-hmm. And it just felt like being with the religion, with the faith, because I think... Even though I think we've done well by the Seventh-day Adventist, it's really not a religious. It's not a movie about religion. It's a movie about faith.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
That with Mel is who he is as a person, and the battle stuff that you know there was nobody else. I mean, I've never gone to the same director and had them reject me twice. You know, to go back the third time.
Right.
It's either a glutton for punishment or everything worked out perfectly.
We have time for two more quick questions. One right here in the back, behind you.
Hi. This movie is so moving and inspiring. The character is still with me. I can't believe that this person actually existed. So given the time and the climate that we're in with the divided country and full of hatred, how do you think this movie fits in? And what are the lessons that people can learn from this person, Desmond, who, like someone said, pretty much like a Jesus Christ figure, where it kind of brings back faith in humanity?
Yeah. Well, you know, real superheroes don't wear spandex tights. I think what Desmond shows us, and what I find the most inspiring thing, is that he managed to transcend and get above the war. We've always had it. We always will have it. And he's just gone way above it, in the midst of it, and shown us another way to love. It's a love story. That's all. I think I already answered the question. So, and that's a vital message now. I mean, the world's in a pretty bad way. It's been this bad before. It's going to get that bad again. I mean, we seem to learn a lesson. It stings like a bitch. We behave for like 20 or 30 years, and then we're back at it again, you know. It's like history regurgitates itself. So, you know, this is just hopefully a little word or a reminder about that. And you know, a little look at the brutality and the viciousness of it. Yeah, I want you to feel kind of appalled by it. But I want to accentuate the other side of it too. That in the midst of it, you know, some good can be extracted.
I think if I could, just Desmond models an idea of masculinity that I think is very, very important, particularly in the time of Trump.
Mm.
Okay. Desmond's masculinity is not about aggression. It's not about domination. It's not about selfishness. It's the antithesis of that. It's about love. It's about self-sacrifice. And I can't think of a more important message in this political era than the message of Desmond Doss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 That's from a Trump supporter.
See me afterwards.
He's a conflicted man.
I have a question about authenticity. I imagine a lot of World War II history buffs are going to watch this. How did you do your research to make sure that it was accurate historically?
Who are we asking?
The writers.
Well, we had, of course, the transcripts of the very excellent interviews that had been done with Desmond, and then I think Andrew and I, you know, both dived deeply into the military records which are available. There's a lot been written on the Okinawa campaign and on medics and World War II. There's a lot of information available out there. And
all of which Bill sent me every night at about 3 o'clock in the morning.
and we certainly took advantage of that because we wanted to be accurate. We wanted this we wanted to pay tribute to what these individuals went through. It was very important to us.
Great. Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you.
Please do.